Welcome to episode 26 of the Schaefer Creative Podcast. I'm your host, Todd Schaefer. In this episode, I return to my conversation with character animator Phil Lockerbie. Phil has managed to make a lifelong career out of character animation outside of Hollywood. He's worked on The Triplets of Belleville, The Little Prince, and Stephen Colbert's Colbert Report. In this episode, Phil and I talk about the life of a character animator and some of the unique challenges that we face. We talk favorite films, favorite books, and surprisingly, Phil is one of the rare animators I've met who's made any attempt to study acting.
What you worked on, what was your most favorite project?
Oh,
or did you have one?
I think the last few years I've been saying, this is my favorite job, this is my favorite time, I love this studio, like I said it with Villeneuve, I definitely said it here, so I'd say it right now is this for sure. One of the freelance jobs I did in New York was for the Washington Huskies. They had a recycling app, and I used to go to the Husky Stadium with my father just to watch football games while my mother and my sister would go shopping. So he had these like tickets. He would buy the tickets every year. And I remember being in that stadium, 73,000 people, and knowing that my work would appear on that big screen. That was pretty cool. And so I took it on. I took on this job through a friend, and I remember working all night just to get this darn logo howling at the end, the Husky, to do it properly, right? And they're really impressed. It's like, wow, like, this is really, really nice, you know? Because they weren't used to getting good quality working.
Yeah, right.
With this one guy who found these random animators in New York, you know. Just, so I guess I'm proud of that one.
Yeah.
It's like,
so yeah. What things did you go through in your development as an animator that were key milestones to your growth?
Life drawing has been a big part of. In terms of like draftsmanship, for sure.
Yeah.
I think going life drawing and getting the bad drawings out of your system, drawing all the time. And I think every so often I do that and then I stop for a while because you can't maintain this level of drawing all the time. And then I look back at those sketchbooks and those life drawings, and they're terrible. But I needed to get through that to get where I am now. And hopefully, in 5 years, I'll be looking at the drawings
that you're doing today.
I'm not too fond of, maybe. You know? So, I think milestones in that sense, and just pursuing, just continuing to try to do better every scene.
Were you always loose? As loose as you are, because you're a pretty loose animator, which isn't a bad thing.
Yeah,
it has its benefits.
I wish I was tighter. I think I missed the class on in-betweening. I was sick, and I literally, because I'd been working for a year, I didn't know how to do a proper in-between, and then somebody at Pascal Blay, Mario Carmel, came over and sat down and said, Phil, let me show you. So this is after I'd worked on The Triplets and everything. So I learned how to do it proper in between 2 years into my career. And I think that reflects upon my loose, like I wasn't very tight and the style that I was working on didn't require that.
Yeah, right.
So, and then I took a job doing cleanup after that, knowing that I needed to improve my cleanup game.
Yeah.
So I worked on Sinbad in Vancouver. That was my only job in Vancouver. I did the DreamWorks Sinbad cleanup for 2 months. And absolutely hated it because, like you said, I like to be loose. And this was a very constricting style of looking and getting paid by the drawing and knowing that you're spending 3 hours on a drawing that only pays you $17.
That's awful. That could be maddening.
Yeah, I guess.
And you did that for how long?
Just a couple months. And one day I won a radio contest. They're giving away $250 cash. It's like a scavenger hunt. And I figured out the clue, and it was just down the street. So I went, won my $250, and I went home. That's how much I disliked doing the cleanup and in-betweens. I made more money in that contest than I did in the
And they were doing Sinbad here?
No, in Vancouver at Bardell.
Okay, Vancouver, Bardell. Okay.
But I really got to work on my tight drawings, for sure. Like, loose can be fun, but...
Well, what loose gives you is it allows you to breathe, I find.
Yeah.
And you're in performance,
yeah.
And you're not so focused on things, so you're not going slow. And then it's fun to figure out what those drawings actually are, for me, after the fact.
Right.
I tend to be a little loose. Not as loose as you, but yeah. I'm on the loose side of things. Yeah. So... But that's the only way I can think. If I start doing details, I lose it.
That's you know, killer.
You lose the performance.
No, that's it. Yeah. That is true. Like, when you're tying down, it's important to just tie down with the loose aspect in mind. You're not putting in... the trouble with doing tie down is just you get caught up in details. And you lose perspective. You lose the nice flow, overlapping action and all that. Even as you're doing your tie downs, you still have to keep it loose, but not so loose.
Now, did they teach you those principles in your school? The animation principles, overlapping action,
Sure, we had some good animation teachers. Yeah.
Because you seem like a really, you're a very advanced animator, right? Your skill level is really top notch. And, you know, as I'm looking at your career going, you know, you're ping ponging through all these things, I'm like, where did you learn how to be like this? You know, it was just you messing around trying to figure out things?
Combination of that and just working, it's like I said, tying down other people's work who had more experience and were better than me. That's a great way to learn.
It's just the consistency of it, because, I mean, 20 years at it, you should be getting good.
Well, not everybody does, but...
Yeah, that's true.
But if you, I guess if you got the work and the opportunity, then you should be improving. Not everybody does. A lot of people just plateau and they just stay at one level that's close to their junior level. They don't really, they aren't able to get out of that. It's like they plateaued there.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm always curious. Okay, why are these animators plateauing, but then these other animators like you were able to reach that level of performance that's really sophisticated.
I think part of that is being a freelancer is that you don't have a job. You're always trying to outdo other freelancers. You're trying to push.
Well, a lot of these are freelancers too because they can't maintain a steady job.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Yeah.
It's something in their training or their artistic development that hasn't freed them into that kind of training. I don't know, it's confusing to me.
It is confusing. When I meet other artists too, I find that they're really proud of this one drawing they've done and they show it. And it's just really, it's a drawing and it's spent a lot of time. And I think if you want to succeed as an animator, you have to have a sketchbook. This is what I did last week. Here, there's 100 pages full.
Right.
And they're all just loose gestures. You know? Yeah. Like, that's what you got to do.
Yeah, because you're drawing to understand. You're not necessarily drawing to make pretty pictures.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. And a lot of times you don't even, you're in the moment. You're just whipping through these drawings. I don't even get a chance to really look at the drawings until that night when I get home and then I can look back and
see what you did.
Yeah, and do you find sometimes the drawings that you didn't like, you like later on?
Sometimes. And the ones I thought I liked.
Yeah, well, exactly. Oh, yeah, exactly.
That's terrible.
Yeah. I drew the girl last night at the bar, and my God,
did you?
It was horrible. It was a bad drawing.
Did you draw it on a napkin? Or you
I did, yeah, of course. Oh, no, it was a post-it note. Oh,
okay.
She said, you do this on a post-it note? I said, yeah.
You always got your pen there, Phil. Mm-hmm. It's life drawing class when we go out with you, right?
It is, yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So... Are you happy doing animation? I mean, do you want to stay in animation? Do you want to move on and try other things? Or?
No, not necessarily. I'm happy. I'm still learning. I think I still have a long ways to go. So
good. That's great.
Yeah.
I think when you feel like you feel like you've gotten there, then you start to fade out. And you're like,
oh, that's it. As soon as you think you've got anything, that's a bad sign. Like, don't ever listen to anyone who says they know it all because
that's right.
They don't know it all, right?
Yeah. So that's great. Do you have aspiration to continue to improve?
Yeah.
It's funny because I interviewed John Stobart, who's a maritime painter.
Yep.
He's 89 years old.
Yes.
And when I called him on the phone and was talking to him, he was in the middle of a painting and he's rushing to get it done for some show in Palm Beach. And he was really focused on trying to get that thing done. He was just excited about doing it. It's interesting to see somebody at 89 years old, they're still excited about getting their big painting done. It's a huge painting. It's a really big gallery painting.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Is it the one that's the image on his on the podcast?
No, it's not that.
But he sounds so young, doesn't
yeah,
he?
He does.
He doesn't sound like an 89-year-old.
No, he doesn't. I can hear it because I know what he sounded like before. But yeah, it's amazing.
I think painting sounds like a nice way to retire, though. I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind taking up painting, like I painted in college, and I sometimes once or twice a year take up some acrylics and paint. But to do that full time, that'd be fun.
Yeah,
do you paint?
I do.
Yeah. There you go.
I did for 2 years. I was trying to make a career out of it.
Yeah.
But my animation clients kept continuing to call me, so I spent more time animating than actually painting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how it happens.
Right? Yeah. But, I guess it's nice. I missed, when I was painting, I missed being able to tell a narrative story.
Mm-hmm.
I missed the time aspect that animation gives you as an artist.
Because
you're doing still images, and it's nice for time, but I found it's not necessarily something I wanted to do, at least at that time in my life.
Right.
What kinds of things that excite you about animation? That's a real heady question.
Yeah, the fact that you can make somebody laugh.
Really?
From just a series of drawings.
Yeah.
That's
an interesting view.
Yeah, that's what I get a kick out of.
Huh. Can you do it?
See? Yeah, oh, I'm trying.
I always chuckle when I look at a lot of your stuff. The little guy with his bobby head.
Yeah.
So you take some joy in bringing that character to life and make him sort of a comedic kind of moment, something entertaining about him.
Yeah.
Rather than just getting the business done that's required in the scene, you try to get. Yeah, it's interesting. Okay, I can see that in your stuff now.
Yeah.
What you said.
What I like about it, and I mean, it's just nice to see, even if it's not a scene that's supposed to invoke laughter, but you could still invoke like sadness or empathy, you know, whatever it is you're trying to get across, whatever the scene is. If it's a sad scene, play up the real sad part of it. I mean, I've in Villeneuve, I did a bunch of sad scenes where, you know, a mother's visiting her strange son, she's folding this cloth over, and you know, and it's amazing how sometimes you actually feel sad by the end of the day when you're animating these scenes, like, oh, what a cry.
You're sad in slow motion.
Exactly,
it's true. You have a performance and you're in that moment of that character's.
I think you have to be, if you're really invested in the scene, if you really care about your job, you have to be.
So I ask this to a lot of the animators. What is your take on talent?
Talent? I don't know if I... Yeah, I think people are born talented in whatever it is. Like, they could be talented at fixing cars. Or they have they're attracted to a propensity towards some sort of a craft or a career. But for animation talent, I think it's 90% hard work. I mean, if you don't work hard, it doesn't matter how talented you are, because you're not going to ever get anywhere.
Because you need that talent to start with, but the talent isn't going to get you across the finish line.
That's it.
You have to build into it and develop it into something that's...
That's it. You have to enjoy it, because if you don't enjoy...
Yes, for sure. That, to me, is more important than talent, enjoying it. Because if you enjoy it, then you're in it.
Yeah. Because you can be mediocre and get really good if you just keep at it. And are around the right people to sort of mentor you, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But I think, like we said, it's just talent is, I think it's just hard work. But for sure, I mean, I knew when I was four, when I saw Fantasia playing, I knew that there was something special about what I was watching. Yeah. The Dance of the Mushrooms. You know, what am I seeing? This is beautiful. Yeah. This is something really touched me. So.
Interesting. So what are your favorite animated films? Some of them.
I think Balto. I have a strange fascination for Balto. For
really?
Some yeah. I really liked those wolves and huskies and stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's not often we see animation like that of four-footed creatures.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Snow White, of course. Aristocrats. Aristocats?
Cats. Aristocrats.
Cats.
That's the BBC show.
Yeah. all those Disney films from the 70s, I think, where they had the really rough line.
Yeah, those are special.
Rescuers. Yeah, 101 Dalmatians. Now that I have a daughter who's 5 and she loves the Aristocats. Actually, watched that a couple times last weekend. So it's great.
Yeah, you get to see it through her eyes. You know.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing to see. And she's a great way to get feedback too. I show her something, and if she doesn't react to it right away, maybe it's not working.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah. Your own focus group and your
kids. Yeah, it's true, right? Yeah. Yeah. What are your favorite films? I never asked you.
I've always loved Peter Pan.
Yeah.
And the same ones you do, the old Disney ones with the rough lines, 101 Dalmatians, and Aristocats. There's something special about Peter Pan. I think when I was a kid, I had gotten my hands on a Super 8 version that was like a 10-minute clip from Peter Pan, and I was able to play it on my projector. Yeah, I just watched it over and over and did frame by frame on it to examine it, and that was amazing. It always stuck with me, being able to see that film, a part of that film on Super 8. Iron Giant. Everyone loves Iron Giant.
For sure. Yeah, that's another one. Any of the Miyazaki films from Ghibli?
No, I've never been a fan of... Yeah. I mean, I like the sensibility that they have and the kinds of stories that they tell that are a lot different than Western animation. But, the characters and the stories, I can't think of any of them that really resonated with me the way American animation does.
Right.
But it's beautiful. I can appreciate the beauty of it and the storytelling aspect of it. I find it very fascinating.
Yeah. Same.
How about you?
Same. I like, one of my favorites is Spirited Away.
Yeah. Yeah, that was marvelous.
Yeah.
Just the sheer imagery alone in that film is incredible. Any books that you found very helpful as your development?
Yes. Well, there's the obvious one, The Illusion of Life.
Yeah.
Richard Williams, which I lent to my roommate's daughter in Brooklyn and then never got it back. So
oh, no.
It's all good. It's fine. She's not even an animator. But I think most recently the book that's really helped me affected my work is the Michael Caine book on acting.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you read that one?
I've read part of it. I've not read the whole thing.
Yeah. Al has it now if you want to ever get it. But he talks about his experience in live action films, but everything he says can be applied to animation, whether it's showing up to work on time,
for sure,
being professional,
yeah,
treating everybody with respect, that kind of thing, everything, and knowing your script, knowing the lines before you shoot.
Yeah.
You know?
Very basic stuff.
It's basic. Yeah, eye direction even, don't blink in a close-up. These things, maybe that doesn't necessarily apply to animation specifically, but in general, most of the things, and acting and just coming up with unique gestures and stealing from really good performances.
Right.
Actors.
Cool.
Yeah.
How many animators do you know who have read acting books or gone to acting classes? Not many.
Not many. Maybe my friends at Blue Sky, maybe. But yeah, that's a very
to me. It's always confused me why that there's no sense of I need to take some acting. I need to learn how to act because I'm acting.
Yeah, that's it, eh? It's funny. How about you? Is this like rare that you meet somebody that reads an acting book?
It's very rare.
Yeah.
So some of the bigger Disney guys and or the big animators in LA, the well-known animators in LA that I know have. Some of them take acting. They've even taken a lot of acting classes. They read the books, Stella Adler and Michael Caine and those things. But it's rare. It is rare.
Ed Hoek was another book that he had acting for animators.
I think it's also important for animators to read filmmaking books as well to understand you know, the process of filmmaking. It's just because you start thinking in terms of cuts and edits and camera movement and sound and all that sort of thing. Yeah. So you understand how you fit in this universe, and you're actually one of the things I find consistently a problem is that animators don't think about there's a cut point coming up. So they'll do some big action right before the cut point or right after the cut point and you miss it.
It's true.
Because you need that time to register what's going on there or before you cut out of it. And they just don't know how to think about that.
That's true. Oftentimes animators working in the same studio won't even talk to one another to find out where that hookup drawing goes.
What's up with that?
I don't know. People are shy these days, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's important,
very important.
Right.
Get that sense of teamwork.
That's it.
Because you're handing off the baton to somebody else, or you're taking it from somebody else.
Yeah, it's a team effort. Absolutely. And to go back to the acting thing, I find a useful exercise I was doing in the 2000s. I would freeze frame Charlie Chaplin.
Uh-huh, yes.
And then draw, you know, and just study his movements and... He's very animated, obviously.
That's where animation is. It's all in that pantomime and that silhouette. You know? So that's what we live with.
Yeah.
Even though our stuff is more sophisticated now, it still goes back to those essentials.
Yeah, that's it.
And if you lose those essentials, then everything falls apart.
That's it. That's true. I remember you were conducting a life drawing class back in the old Pascal Blake studio in Wellington. Do you remember that? We'd do life drawing at lunchtime. Once in a while.
I'll have to refresh my memory.
I remember you said you were talking about how it applies to animation. You said good animation is watching your scene across a crowded room on a little tiny monitor and still being able to understand what's happening.
Yeah, that's
that kind of stuck with me, and it's true. And that's what I do sometimes at home, and I'll play my scene. I'll go to the balcony and I'll look through the window. If I can. And it doesn't make sense.
So. You actually took it literally. That's
fantastic.
No,
That's
fantastic. Yeah. That was told to me by Mike Cazala, an animator in LA who trained me.
Cool.
He would always say that. Imagine your scene is on this small, tiny television set with bad reception, and you're looking at it from across the room. You need to know what's being communicated.
It's so true. So those poses better hold up, even if there's not much happening. What is that pose conveying? Is the character happy, sad, in a rush, waiting for somebody?
I do not remember that class.
Yeah, you know, we all have memories of different, selective memories, I guess, but I remember that day,
Where was it being taught? Was it in the big studio?
I think it would have been where they...
Where they had the motion
yes,
camera?
Yes.
So it was in there.
In the back, yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I have no memory of that.
Yeah.
Wow, that was a long time ago.
Roxanne was there, JC, Jean-François, and all those guys, I was working on Lipton.
Al was there.
Al was there.
Al was there.
Al was always there, so.
Al was
He's always been there. Everyone knows Al. He would get all the good work and do a great job at it.
Yeah.
That's why, a lot of us would... Not starved, but we wouldn't get all that.
Al, you're doing too good. Yeah. Stop it. Pull back, man. Well, this is great, Phil. I appreciate
taking
the time to do this.
Thanks for doing this. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. What a pleasure.
Character animator Chris Weem will be up in our next podcast. And looking ahead... Disney animator Tony Bancroft of the Bancroft Brothers will be my guest on the Schaefer Creative Podcast. Thank you for joining this edition of the Schaefer Creative Podcast. You can find us on the web at schaefercreative.studio. Music is by Lee Rosevere.